Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, happy and good afternoon to all of you in Stand in the Gap Radio Network here today. This is Sam Rohr on this Monday. Well, halfway through June already, hard to believe. And normally you hear Gary Dahl, who welcomes you to the program, and David Kistler. Today and this week will be a little bit different. This is Sam Rohr here today, and David Kistler, as we mentioned before, is on the other side of the world. He is visiting for about 10 days in Israel, and he was looking very much forward to that trip, and we will be talking with him. Gary Dahl will be actually talking with him directly as he calls in from Israel, hopefully Friday of this week, and I think that will be a very, very special program. So that's happening, and then Gary is in California today at a conference, and for pastors, for Christian leaders, a 3-day conference, and we are hoping, and he is hoping, he's there, he's representing the American Pastors Network there, and Lord willing, on Wednesday of this week, that we will be able to interface with him, and I think get a good update of the kinds of things that they have been going over and perhaps learning there. But I hope you all had a great weekend, and you were able to spend time with family and spend time in God's house yesterday. And are ready to get back at it this week. But this is the program, the Stand in the Gap Today program, features, as you know, the issues of the day from a biblical and constitutional perspective. And we're going to do that today, and there's no shortage of things to do. And today, I'm going to get right into it because we have a very special guest. He's been with us before on this program. But that is Bill Federer. He's an American writer. He's a former pastor. And he contributes to a lot of things, written a lot of books, Backfired, A Nation Born for Religious Tolerance No Longer Tolerates Religion. He does American Minutes, which if you listen to this program in the station, you hear oftentimes in the breaks. And with that, I'm going to welcome you, Bill Federer, to the Stand in the Gap Today. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Sam.
And Bill, you've been with us before, and we got a lot of great comments from folks that were listening to that program. You took us on a little bit of a whirlwind trip of some of the history. But today, if folks have been looking, they're seeing things out there in some sectors about the famous anniversary of an amazing document that has affected tremendously where we are. Not in the Western, just in the Western world, but here in America. And I want you to tell our listeners about it and get right into it. What happened on this date 800 years ago that we need to know about today?
Well, it's called the Magna Carta. And what happened was England, excuse me, I've got a little cough in my throat. England was invaded by the Vikings. They were the Dane Vikings. The Dane ended up being called Denmark. But the Dane Vikings from Scandinavia invaded England and destroyed churches, destroyed libraries, killed, pillaged, and all of the leadership in England was killed, except for 23-year-old King Alfred. Now, a little background. Britain used to be ruled by the Celts, C-E-L-T-S, and the Brits, B-R-I-T-S, and other different tribes. And then Julius Caesar invaded Britain, and it was a Roman colony until the Roman legions were pulled back around 400 A.D. because Attila the Hun was scourging Europe. And that's when it was sort of no man's land for a while, and Patrick was kidnapped during this time, taken to Ireland, sold as a slave. And then the Anglos invaded Britain, and then the Saxons invaded Britain. And so those two different tribes ended up working together under King Alfred, and they became known as the Anglo-Saxons. And then around the year 800 is when the Vikings began to invade into Britain. And King Alfred the Great was able to drive back the Vikings. They were heathen, and they killed an autobiographer, or a biographer named Bishop Asser, said Alfred attacked the whole pagan army, fighting ferociously in dense order by divine will, eventually won the victory. So Alfred the Great, there's a stone there in Somerset down by the ocean, and Alfred got his band of fellows together, and they, on that stone, vowed they would fight and drive out the Vikings, and he would do these guerrilla attacks, and he would win some and lose some, but finally drove them back to East Anglia, which is the east part of Britain. And there he gave the Viking king an ultimatum. The Viking king's name was King Guthrum. And he said, go back to Scandinavia or convert to Christianity. And King Guthrum decided that he would stay and convert to Christianity. And so Alfred the Great was now ruler of the large part of Britain. And he decided to write the laws down. Instead of a bunch of these little kingdoms, and they each had their own little sets of laws, he wrote these laws down, and so went back to some old Latin law. And then there was a Lucius, king of the Britons, around 156, and he had converted, became a Christian, took some of his laws. Patrick, there in Ireland, when he evangelized and baptized 120,000 of these Druids to Christianity, they got rid of their Druid law, and Patrick came up with the Code of Patrick, and it was a set of laws that the Irish missionaries took with them back to the Scots and the Picts, and so Alfred the Great put in some of Patrick's code. There were some other laws there in England, and then there was a Saint Augustine of Canterbury that came to England and baptized some of the different kings, and his laws, King Ine of Wessex and King Offa of Mercia. So all these different laws were codified into one great law that Alfred the Great had. And he starts it off with a preface of the Ten Commandments, parts of the book of Exodus, Christ's Sermon on the Mount, excerpts from Acts of the Apostles. Alfred the Great is credited with having started Oxford University.
And Bill, and talking about Alfred the Great, is this the same Alfred that before he would go to war would have his war song, as he called it?
I'm not familiar with that part, but he was definitely a Christian, and
I think he is, and I read that many years ago about talking about putting the about putting to flight 10,000 of the enemy, and he would verbalize this when he went to battle, because he understood who God was, and he understood even in the nature of the role of the king, what the role of the king ought to be, and all of that. And of course, that's what you're basically trying to lay out here, is it not? Now,
well, exactly, yeah. And this is the basis of English common law, that Alfred, since he went to the Bible, it was individual rights and creator-given values and worth, and that's what the...
Very good. Bill, I'm going to have to interrupt. We're going to go away for a break. Hold on right here, folks. We're going to come back on the other side of this break. Pick up with Bill Federer of American Mint. We're going to focus down on the Magna Carta, where things came from, what was built into that, and why it is applicable to today. Again, now this is Sam Rohr for Stand in the Gap Today. Our guest, Bill Federer. Stay with us. We'll be right back after these commercial announcements. This is Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, and I'm thrilled to announce that BJU Press, the Christian homeschool curriculum leader, has come alongside APN as a national sponsor of Stand in the Gap Today. Together, we share a commitment to further a true biblical worldview and to follow Jesus' command to be salt and light to the culture. BJU Press provides academically sound educational materials designed to fully equip children for college and the workplace. As postmodern culture seeks to eliminate God from the classroom, BJU Press integrates biblical truth into curricula that's accurate, dependable, and exceeds all national academic standards. APN welcomes BJU Press as a national partner and sponsor of Stand in the Gap Today. If you're a parent and want to find out more, visit BJU Press online at bjupresshomeschool.com or by calling 800-845-5731. Again, we at APM welcomes BJU Press as a national partner, as together we work to instill Christian values in the generations to follow.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in eighth grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people. Didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The legend of Robin Hood speaks of Richard the Lionhearted. Upon his return to England after crusading in the Holy Land, he took back the throne from his brother John. After his death, though, John again ruled oppressively. The angry barons responded by capturing London and on this date, June 15, 1215, surrounded John on the plains of Runnymede. There, the arbitrary power of the king was forever limited when they forced him to sign the Magna Carta. It ends with these words, "For the salvation of our souls and the souls of our heirs and unto the glory of God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Well, welcome back. This is Sam Rohr, and today I'm with our guest here, Bill Federer. Gary Dull is in California, and David Kistler, normally on this program where we are together, is in Israel. So we're going to be talking with him more later this week about what he's doing in Israel. But for those just joining us, we are talking about a tremendously important historical occurrence that happened 800 years ago. Now, Bill Federer, going to go back to you, American Minute. We just listened to you and that commercial just before this, set up perfectly for right now. But we're talking about Alfred the Great, King Alfred, what was happening there in the history of Anglo-Saxons and things coming together into what became the Magna Carta. Bill Federer, why was the signing of the Magna Carta so important? What drove it? Why are we looking back on it with great fondness today?
Well, connecting some of the dots, Alfred the Great, the young guy, codified the laws of England, and the Vikings also invaded France, and they were called Norsemen, or as we later called them, Normans. And they ended up converting and became Christians, and they controlled central France. And then in 1066 AD, the Christian Norman Viking named William, he was William the Norman or William the Conqueror, he invades England and conquers it. And so we got the Alfred the Great, is his law is what's referred to now as common law, and it gives rights to the people. And then William the Conqueror comes in, and he is a Christian, but he centralizes power back into the hands of a king. He sets up this feudal system. And so from this point on, there are two struggles in England. The ones that want the king to be in charge, and he taxes and takes away land and gives it out to favors to those that support him, and those that want to appeal to the ancient rights of the Englishmen, which go back eventually to Alfred the Great and his code. And so this struggle goes on. Now, the Muslims, I sort of left that out. Muslims are in the Middle East, and they conquer the Holy Land, which used to be Christian. They conquer Syria, which used to be Christian. The name Christian was first used in Syria. Mm-hmm. Muslims conquer Egypt, which used to be Christian. North Africa used to be Christian. They control Spain for 700 years. They invaded into what is today Turkey. And so the Greek Christians and the Syrian Christians beg the West for help. They finally send help. It's called the Crusades. The First Crusade, around 1095, takes back Jerusalem for 100 years. Second Crusade and Third Crusade was led by Richard the Lionheart. Richard the Lionheart's from England, and he is the king, and he goes over, and he's fighting Saladin. In my American Minute, I tell the whole story. There was Frederick of Prussia that was going down there to fight Barbossa, and he drowns in a river. He gets knocked off his horse, and it's only 2 feet of water, but he's wearing all his armor, so he drowns. And so the German people go back, and then France and England are the two countries fighting the Third Crusade. And one day, Richard the Lionheart wakes up, and France is gone. Philip of France goes back, and he begins to try to take over Normandy while Richard's busy fighting the Third Crusade. So now Richard the Lionheart's got a double problem. And so he strikes a deal with Saladin, the Muslim leader, to let the Christians go. Saladin only released those who could afford to pay the jizya, the ransom tax, and 15,000 of them could not afford it, so Saladin sells them into Muslim slavery. Anyway, Richard is going back. He's shipwrecked in the Mediterranean. He gets to hitchhikes across Europe dressed as a peasant with his followers, and he's in Austria, and some people at an inn notice that Richard was being treated special by these other peasants, and the word gets out that it's the king of England, and the Austrian king captures him and puts him in prison. And so he's in a tower there, and then Richard's minstrel back in England named Blondel walks across Europe from kingdom to kingdom singing Richard's favorite song, and finally walks into one castle, and he's singing it, and Richard hears it from the tower, and he sings the refrain, and that's how they found out where Richard was. And so the King John, Richard's brother back in England, has to raise the ransom. And so how do you raise a king's ransom? You got to tax the people. And so part of King John's taxing was to raise the ransom for Richard the Lionheart. Anyway, but this is the setting for the story of Robin Hood, right? The Sherwood Forest, mm-hmm. and Nottingham, and the wicked King John. And but finally, Richard is ransomed, goes back, and he's fighting to try to take back Normandy, and he's shot with an arrow and killed. And so now John is ruling again. And King John basically gives up on Normandy. And so all these barons in England are upset because they owned a lot of land over there, and now it's gone. It's taken over by France. And then this King John continues the taxing, and he would take away somebody's farm and somebody's estate, and he decided he's going to hang this person. He was just ruling by his whims and caprices, which is what every king would do, whatever mood he was in that day. And so finally these noblemen of England surrounded King John on the fields of Runnymede in 1215 AD on June 15th, and they force him to sign the Magna Carta. Magna means great, Carta means card or charter, so this is the Great Charter, and this basically tells the king that he can't arbitrarily take away someone's land. He can't arbitrarily arrest somebody and throw them into prison. There's got to be a trial by peers. And so 25 of these noblemen surround the king. And the bottom line was that if the king didn't go along with it, these 25 noblemen with their estates and their armies vowed to join together against the king and fight him. Hmm. So now the King John is between his rock and a hard place, and he signs the Magna Carta. And so this is the first practice of a king having his hands tied by a document. And even Winston Churchill writes about, here is a law which is above the king, which even he must not break. The reaffirmation of a supreme law and its expression in a general character is the work of the great Magna Carta, and this alone justifies the respect in which men have held it. There was a British, now, Sir Edwin Coke. He says, the Magna Carta will have no sovereign.
So I want to go back on something here now, Bill, as you're laying this out. The original work of King Arthur, Alfred the Great, in what he laid out, that you say he embodied the Ten Commandments, he put into some things about the Beatitudes, he built into a very biblical basis of that document. What part did that actually play in the motivation, if anything, with the nobles and the others that forced the king here ultimately to sign this document and limit the powers of the king? What was that thread that went through there? Was it strong? Did it mean anything?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that was their claim to their ancient rights, because Alfred's great law said that people have rights from a creator, that God made man in his image, and so everyone is equal, that there's the punishment fits the crime. If you take away steal something, you repay it, but you don't get your hand cut off, you know, like Islamic law. So these ancient rights is what we refer to as common law. And so this was the beginning of the struggle of these lords and princes saying, look, King John, you're acting like a dictator and taking away stuff. And we have these ancient rights that were promised us as Englishmen, which go back to the Alfred's code. And so we're going to appeal to those as a justification to tie your hands, that you just can't be this dictator and say, hey, I don't have time to wait for Congress. I'm just going to, got a pen and a phone, and I'm going to do whatever I want. No, your hands are tied by a constitution. You can't do whatever you want, no matter how good you think it is.
So in effect here, Bill, what you had is you had the circumstances where the king was putting oppressive laws into place, the taxation, all of that kind of thing, which really helped to drive people to the point. But when they actually appealed to the limitation of the king's authority, central government or government's authority, they appealed to God and the historic natural rights that God had given, which goes back to the days of Alfred the Great. Is that correct in that scenario?
Yes, yes. And so since America is considered founded by the English and the English common law, we actually say, hey, we have rights that go back to the Magna Carta and rights that go back to English common law and eventually Alfred's code. And so here we are today in 2015 still referring to the Magna Carta as a limiting of the king's arbitrary power.
And Bill, with our founders then moving up through the years, moving up to our founders coming here, 16, 20, and 30, and up into that point, for them, the hearkening back to this document, this signing, and all that you have laid out, was it an obvious and integral part of their motivation when they came here? I mean, was it just accidental, or were they driven by the knowledge of a lot of these facts?
Well, they definitely were driven by it. The U.S. Supreme Court wrote in Bank of Columbia in 1819, the words of the Magna Carta were intended to secure the individual from the arbitrary exercise of the powers of government, unrestrained by the established principles of private right and distributive justice. So the Supreme Court even refers to the Magna Carta.
Bill, stay with us here on the other side. We're going to come back in this next break and pick up and bring it now up to speed, these applications of these principles to our founders, our Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and then ultimately we're going to end up with what do we do now with a government and a president that is out of bounds. Folks, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr with our guest, Bill Federer. Stay tuned, and we'll be back right after these commercial announcements.
Kings or Parliament could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and Lord of all the earth. They are not annexed to us by parchments and seals. They are created in us by the decrees of Providence, which established the law of our nature. They are born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. A quote from John Dickinson, 1804.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carol McHugh. A man named Jeb makes it official this afternoon. He'd like to be the third U.S. president named Bush.
Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is expected to make his presidential campaign official in just a few hours. Bush was the first Republican more than 6 months ago to form an exploratory committee for a possible run, and since then he's done very well in polling. He's also the second prominent Florida politician to enter the race after Senator Marco Rubio.
Fox News Radio's Eben Brown at Miami-Dade College in Florida. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton, who kickstarted her campaign over the weekend, took aim at the GOP today.
Did they cut subsidies to oil companies? No. Did they cut tax loopholes like carried interest for hedge fund managers? No. The Republicans took care of those at the top and went after the kids.
Mrs. Clinton's in Rochester, New Hampshire. Fox News. We report. You decide.
School property taxes are out of sight and going up almost every year. Even if you've paid off your mortgage, you haven't paid off the state of Pennsylvania. If you lose your job, you could lose your home too. But there is hope on the horizon. Harrisburg is considering a bill which will eliminate property taxes for school funding. It replaces it with a broad-based small increase in income taxes and sales taxes. This makes all Pennsylvanians responsible for school funding, not just property owners. Please join us at Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. for a town hall meeting to discuss how we can fully fund our schools without taxing people out of their homes. Town hall meeting, Montgomery County Community College in Pottstown on Thursday, June 25th at 7 p.m. Admission is free.
Tri-state area, streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The resource library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and Stand in the Gap today.
Well, thank you for staying with us and joining us again as we move through the Stand in the Gap to Today program. We thank you all for listening. And I want to say, before we go back to our guest here, just really, really glad to hear the increasing comments and testimonies from folks who are listening to this program. We try to deliver things over here on this broadcast that are pertinent, that are accurate, and come from a perspective that is both biblical and constitutional. We would encourage you, I would just really urge you who are listening that if you have friends, family members, others that are not yet listening to the program, that you just put a note to them and encourage them to listen where you are listening. Many are on the internet, and we know across the country and around the world, and for that we're glad, and on the stations across Pennsylvania, and increasingly as the Lord brings them across this nation. So just want to thank you all for being there and say you mean a great deal, and we're glad that you are there. We're going down the road here of the Magna Carta here and what's happening. Bill, I'd like to come back now. Let's bring this thing home. Magna Carta signed 800 years ago. It was where the king was put on notice, effectively, that his powers were not complete and he had to limit them. We talked about it a little briefly about our founders who came, knew this, referred to it, and actually was a part of their thinking when they came here to the United States of America and what is now our nation. But if you were to pull out, Bill, one or two, maybe say take three, the top three tenets or principles that were incorporated within that Magna Carta that were intentionally carried over and put into the Declaration of Independence and only the Constitution, what became our bedrock here. What were they? And rank them for me, if you don't mind.
Well, Magna Carta Clause 1 says, "The English Church shall be free and shall have its rights undiminished and its liberties unimpaired." And so this is reflected in our First Amendment that says, "Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof." Magna Carta Clause 6 says, "If we, our chief justice or officials, offend us in any way, that we have claim to immediate redress," and this is reflected in the First Amendment, that we have the right to petition Congress for a redress of grievances. Magna Carta Clause 12 says, "No scutage or tax shall be imposed on the kingdom unless by common counsel." This is reflected in the revolutionary phrase, "No taxation without representation," and in the Declaration of Independence, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So we have to consent. Magna Carta Clause 13 says, "We also will grant that all other cities and boroughs and so forth shall enjoy their liberties and free customs." And then the Constitution says, "Full faith and credit shall be given in each state." And we have our rights, Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution. "The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of the citizens of the several states." I could go on. There's Magna Carta Clause 20. It says, "For a trivial offense, you shall only be fined in proportion to the degree of the offense." And our Eighth Amendment says, "Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed." Magna Carta 28, "No constable or bailiff shall take corn or other provisions without immediate tendering of money." Well, the Fifth Amendment says, "Nor shall any private property be taken for a public cause without just compensation."
Okay, Bill, I'm going to jump in there. So basically, you could keep going on that, but very effectively, what you're saying is that there are many elements of what we now have come to enjoy under our constitutional republic here, directly, as you were just so easily able to just identify there, came from that document. Now, in the case of our founders, when they were here, did they, in fact, compare what was happening with King George in a parallel light to what was happening in the past? And how did they go about addressing that issue with King George from the standpoint of being under authority? If you understand, I'm going to ask you, I'll go this direction. You said back when the Magna Carta was signed that it was a group of nobles that pulled themselves together. They were rulers of the people. They said, "No, you will not." And they went and they limited King George. But over here, our founders didn't have a bunch of lords and military to which they could go to threaten the king. How did they take and apply these principles with King George?
Well, matter of fact, the Sir Edwin Coke wrote Institutes on the Laws of England, and he refers to the Magna Carta many times. Sir Edwin Coke said, "The Magna Carta will have no sovereign. There's no king above the Magna Carta." And so Sir Edwin Coke's works were read by none other than John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. And Coke said this in 1610, "When an act of Parliament is against common right or reason, the common law will adjure such an act void. And so here is Coke, which is read by John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and says, when Parliament does an act that's against common right or reason, that act is void. And so here are our founding fathers. We had a Stamp Act. And the Stamp Act says that the British government would make Americans pay for every piece of paper, every printed document, every marriage license, every playing card, every newspaper had to have a stamp from the king. Mm-hmm. And we had no representative in Parliament. This is just them flat out deciding. And so here's an act of Parliament. And our founding fathers said, look, this is against common law, common rights. And so we're going to decide this is null and void. And so the Massachusetts Assembly, when the Stamp Act came out, wrote this, that the Stamp Act was, quote, against the Magna Carta and the natural rights of Englishmen, and therefore, according to Lord Coke, null and void. So here's our founding father saying, hey, this Stamp Act is null and void, even though it was done by Parliament, because it's against the common law.
So, Bill, in reality, they didn't rebel, as some would say. They recognized the underpinnings of that judgment and said it wasn't even applicable. So, in effect, they ignored it.
Oh, right. And Ben Franklin goes over to England, and he is being interviewed by Parliament, and they're saying, you know, what's wrong? Why don't the people want to pay this? You know, because we were paying for the military after the French and Indian War. And Franklin's like, you know, you don't understand. We're a rural country. You can't, you know, the cost of collecting one stamp from some rural town is going to take more money than what the stamp would bring in. And besides, Franklin, and then you read the response of the Parliament and Ben Franklin's, record of it. They're like totally oblivious. They're like, you mean the people of America have a problem with paying this tax? And it's like, hello, where are you guys? Because we had no representative over there. And so our founders said that if the king does something that's against common law and Parliament does something that's against common law, it's null and void. And the common law goes back to the Magna Carta, goes back to Alfred the Great, goes back to the Code of Patrick in Ireland, goes back to the Bible, and the idea that you have rights from a creator that no government, no king can take away.
Now, so Bill, in France, around the same time, things were happening in France, which ultimately came along to support us here. We know that and so forth. But what became the French Revolution was driven by some of these things, same things, but was totally different. Was it not? Explain the contrast between what was going on here and the approach you just laid out and what was happening almost simultaneously in France and why, frankly, it did not work out.
Religion. In France, it had been, they had their several different massacres and drove out the Protestants, and they fled to many of the colonies in America. And the church in France really did not strive to teach the people self-government. It was more of a hierarchical church that went back to the Middle Ages. And so when they, in France, decided to get rid of their king, there was no order. And in America, when we broke from our king, we had a century and a half of self-government based on these Protestant principles where everybody is taught the law of God. And so it's the difference between having a dog that's trained and letting it loose in the house and it's going to, you know, treat everything nice, or a dog that's not trained and you let it loose in the house and it's going to go to the bathroom everywhere and rip up the sofa and so forth. I tell parents, you know, give the teenager the car keys and says, you can come home whenever because I know you're going to do what's right. But if you don't do what's right and drink and drive and party, you're going to be pulled over by the police and thrown in jail. So, teenager, you are going to be controlled, either voluntarily from the inside or forcibly from the outside. And it's the same way with the nation. We're either going to be voluntarily controlled with internal morals, or we're going to give in to our passions and lust and teach in schools that there's no right and wrong and kids can experiment, do whatever they want. And they get out there and sure enough, they do experiment and they steal, kill. And then there's chaos and everybody say, government step in to restore order, and they do with the dictatorship.
Bill, folks, you're listening to Bill Federer and Sam Rohrer. We're talking about the history here in this country. And what you're talking about there, Bill, is self-government. Alfred the Great talked about the Ten Commandments. here in Pennsylvania. William Penn talked about the necessity of submitting ourselves to the Ten Commandments of God, a distinct difference. We're going to come back on the other side, folks, with Bill, and we're going to talk about the application of these principles to what's happening today in Washington and across this country. Again, this is Stand in the Gap today. Sam Rohr today with guest Bill Fetter of American Minute. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Blessed is a man who finds wisdom, the man who gains understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask of God, who gives generously to all. This is Roy Russell, president of the Life Financial Group, online at thelifegroup.org. For nearly 40 years, we have worked with believers and especially widows across the nation. We all need wisdom as it relates to our finances, taxes, and estate planning, but no one more than the widow who must manage on her own. We are financial advisors committed to a biblical worldview. We assist with your income taxes and give advice to help keep your taxes low. We also carefully invest your money to provide a comfortable retirement income, and we work closely with Christian attorneys to draft a believer's will and powers of attorney. Please call me with your questions or to discuss your needs and desires at 800-688-5800. That's 1-800-688-5800, or online at thelifegroup.org. That's thelifegroup.org.
Securities and advisory services offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Deer might be fun to look at, but they can rub the bark off your trees overnight, creating thousands of dollars in damage. Ordinary tree wraps or stormwater pipe can't stand up to deer when they're rutting or in heat. Hi, I'm Jim Saunders, the creator of Tree Armor, the world's first and only spring-loaded tree guard. Tree Armor stands up to any buck, protecting young trees up to 4 inches thick from deer rubbing, as well as power tools. It's infused with a natural cayenne pepper scent that repels deer before they can do damage to your trees. It's brown and almost invisible from a short distance, and Tree Armor is the only tree guard made in America using only EPA-approved vinyl, free of lead and heavy metals found in other imported products. Tree Armor is not available in stores, but you can buy it from the manufacturer at a huge discount. Go to our website, mytreearmor.com, and buy as many as you need from about $3 each. We even pay the postage. That's mytreearmor.com to protect your trees.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Pennsylvania's General Assembly once again is looking at a possible expansion of gambling to try and meet budget shortfalls. This time around, the proposal is to legalize online gambling, which, as one senator said just last week, it would in effect put a slot machine in every home, even at 3 a.m. Well, first, government gambling revenues don't match the promises. You remember the property tax relief that Ed Rendell promised when legalizing casinos? Well, that hardly materialized. And as we predicted at that time, casino gambling would create nearly 300,000 gambling addicts statewide, causing crime, bankruptcy, family breakup, and suicide. The most recent survey shows we're at 280,000 addicted gamblers in Pennsylvania and climbing. Government-sponsored gambling is a bad idea, and adding to it is simply irrational. Find out more about this issue at our website at pafamily.org.
Chris Christie will be there. Scott Walker will be there. Rick Santorum will be there. You need to be there. The Northeast Republican Leadership Conference at the Sheraton Philadelphia Downtown Hotel, June 18th through the 20th. Meet the top Republican candidates for president right here in Philly. Sign up at 2015leadership.gop. That's 2015leadership.gop. The Northeast Republican Leadership Conference. You can't miss it. Paid for by the Republican Party of Pennsylvania, not authorized by any candidate or candidate committee.
Ronald Reagan once said, "Politics is not a bad profession. If you succeed, there are many rewards. If you disgrace yourself, you can always write a book."
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and walk through the resource library to find over 500 separate resources with more added every week. Our resource library is a collection of biblical worldview resources categorized according to selected topics like abortion, marriage, the Constitution, evolution and creation, and much more. The Resource Library is free to use and designed for pastors or anyone who wants to find the very best materials available to more effectively relate biblical truth on a full range of issues facing the culture. Again, visit the website today, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net, and find out how you can help reverse cultural decline, equipped with the best resources available. And now, let's rejoin the American Pastors Network and stand in the gap today.
Okay, welcome back. This is Sam Rohr, and we are focusing today on the implications and the applications of the Magna Carta and the signing of that 800 years ago, and its significant influence all the way through today, the elements within our Declaration of Independence and United States Constitution and self-government and all of these things have its roots right back here. And in this last concluding segment of this program today, Bill Federer of American Minute, I want to go back to you, and I want to ask you a couple of very specific questions here. And that is this. The Magna Carta and what it said, and I'm seeing a lot of folks referring back to that, but if there was a message, or could a message could be framed from the Magna Carta, for instance, to the Supreme Court of the United States and what it's now dealing with relative to matters of marriage and potential ruling and so forth, what would be the message of the Magna Carta to the Supreme Court justices today?
Well, it would be don't force your will on the nation. Here you have these unelected justices. Five of them decide the fate of the country. That's not what the Founding Fathers decided. And two of them should actually recuse themselves because they participated in performing gay weddings. And so we see that the Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. So where you have 75% of the state of Montana votes to have marriage be a man and a woman, and one unelected judge decides to throw out the will of the state, it's no longer government of the people. It's government of this one unelected person, forcing it down on the other. So the big issue is not gay marriage. The big issue is once the Supreme Court decides it, what's going to happen next?
Is it not a matter of law, Bill? Is that the lesson to and what the Supreme Court justices, if they were to listen to what the Magna Carta said and built within our Constitution, what would their decision necessarily have to be if they followed these principles?
It would be hands off. They have no jurisdiction over the issue. And that's what the First Amendment says. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The federal government's not supposed to prohibit. So what's going to happen? Well, as soon as the Supreme Court would decide that gay marriage is okay, assuming that they do that, hopefully they won't, but if they do, immediately they're not going to go to the bedroom. They're going to go to the preschool. And they're going to begin to promote their homosexual agenda amongst the children, that you're not male or female, you're male, female, and whatever else you want to be, whatever you feel that day. And if you are a child that says, I think it's right to have a mommy and a daddy, they're going to begin to bully you and say you're a homophobe and you're all kinds of names. Yep. And so this poor little kid that believes, so in California, they actually outlawed the terms mother and father in the public schools, and they outlawed the bathrooms so the guys can go in the girls' bathrooms and so forth. And there's this confusion that they're not content with. They're going to begin to boycott Christian businesses, sue Christian businesses, sue radio stations that allow people to talk about the Bible, censor pastors' sermons like they're doing in Houston, or the mayor wants to, and begin to take away 501c3 licenses from churches and begin to tell churches and charities that they have to hire transsexual and bisexual and have them teach in their nurseries and little Sunday schools. And in other words, it's a declaring of war against the Christian values. And so if you're a Christian, you no longer have any rights. You can no longer say, I have my rights and freedoms, because they're going to try to take them all away.
Now, let's go to the executive branch. It's very clear. It was easy to draw that connection with the court and what the courts ought to do. Do we not, or are we not also in the executive branch with a president and a Congress that lets them go along with it, a phone and a pen, the making of the law? Is this not really almost an imperial presidency that we have? And is there not a connection, Bill, from your perspective, historically between the actions of King George or John or any of these in the past? What's the connection, what's the similarity, and what's the solution here?
Well, the normal form of government in world history is king. Now, they go by different names: Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar, Maharaja, Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar, Attila the Hun. That power, like a rubber band, wants to snap back into the hands of a king. And it goes back to the fall in the garden and Cain killing Abel and selfishness coming into the human DNA. And so you put some babies in a playpen, one of them will take the rattle from the others. Put some kids on a playground, one of them is the bully hogging the ball. Put them in the woods, one of them is the Indian chief, put them in the inner city, one of them is the gang leader. So it's sort of like the Lord of the Rings, or, you know, and and so it's inevitable. And Israel is actually the first instance in history where we have a nation attempting to rule itself without a king. And everyone was equal before the law. There was no royal family to butter up next to. Israel had private property. Wherever there's a king, you really don't have private property, because you get on his wrong side, he can take it away and hang you. You know, like, what was it, Ahab took away the field, the vineyard of
yes.
somebody. And and so where in Israel, originally the land was permanently titled to the families. And if they got in a pinch and sold it every 50 years, it reverted back. This prevented a dictator. The intent was to prevent a dictator from regaining the land and putting the people back into slavery.
Bill, as we wind to the close, I don't want to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but we have just a couple minutes left. Wind it sent down to here. What we're seeing here, you're saying Magna Carta, its basic underlying principles, biblical principles, all of that through history, through law, has been applied down through the very day. We're reverting right back right now to the same old thing that's happened time and time again. In this day in which we are living, when folks are listening to this program and across this country and all of these things that are happening, where people are coming up against an imperial government who is consolidating power, what must and can we do? Where is the solution, Bill? We talk a lot about being the role of the pastor in the church to get these messages out here. What is your advice right now on the end, based on the history that we know? What must we do in this nation to turn this corner in which we're engaged? What is it?
Well, the founders set it up so that in America, the people are the king and the politicians are the servants. So we actually took the model and flipped it upside down. So Romans 13 says to submit to the authorities. Well, in America, the people are the ultimate authority. And so if you see an analogy of you're visiting a king and you're going through the kingdom, you're seeing crimes and murders and rapes, and you get into the king's chamber and he's sitting there all depressed saying, I wish somebody would fix this mess. And you tap him on the shoulder and remind him, hey, you're the king. You're responsible to fix this mess. Well, that's like in America. Somebody watching TV, seeing all this crime, listening to the radio, hearing all these terrible things, and saying, I wish somebody would fix this mess. Well, hello, reach through the radio and the TV tube and tap you on the shoulder. You are the king. You are accountable to God to fix this mess. You don't need anybody else to tell you what to do. Get busy.
Amen. Bill Federer, 15 seconds. Where can people go to contact you?
AmericanMinute.com.
Okay, AmericanMinute.com, folks. You're listening, Sam Rohr and Bill Federer. I hope you understand the essence of what we're talking about today. The biblical underpinnings of our law, if it's thrown out, we do not have a just law. Folks, history is there. The biblical principles are there. Stay with it. Join us again tomorrow, folks, on Standing the Gap Today. This is Sam Rohr on behalf of Gary Dahl and David Kessler.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.